Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and it's time for a podcast. This week's podcast is amazing. I was interviewed by my good friend, Shalene Johnson, on Shalene's podcast, and Shalene is a really amazing businesswoman. She's a boss girl, entrepreneur, lifestyle and fitness motivator. She is one of the best people to motivate you to change your life. She talks about ADHD, and she asked me all the questions that you guys are going to want to know all the answers to about your faces. So we talked about injectables, including Botox, fillers, Kybella, filler migration for lip filler problems. We talked about under eye filler, facelift, eyelid surgery, cellulite dimples, the works, everything you want to know about your face. This is an in-depth interview. I'm so excited to share with you my interview on the Shalene Show. You guys need to tune in and check out Shalene Johnson on Instagram. She is a major source of inspiration to me. I know you're going to love it.
Dr. K, thank you so much for being a regular and very popular returning guest to the Shalene Show.
This is my favorite place to be.
My favorite place to be is where you're sitting right now in your office. I leave just feeling more youthful and more like myself. So super excited to answer a bajillion questions that we got from the audience. And, you know, I think before we jump into them, if you don't mind sharing with us just some general advice that probably most plastic surgeons wish people understood before they decide to do injections or some kind of a surgery?
Of course. So number one is do a little research and bring us examples of work that you like. If you have lip filler in mind, bring me a picture of two or three beautiful lips that you, that's your aesthetic. And then that translates so much better than you trying to tell me with words. So I love that. I love you to get recommendations of good work from friends. Remember that you can't just buy filler anywhere. A filler is not a filler is not a filler. You have to know that the person injecting is the most important thing. You can give two people a paint box and paint two entirely different pictures with the same box of tools. So anyone can buy filler anywhere, even on Amazon. They can do a really crappy job. It's not about the price. It's the art and the skill and the expertise. And these products can be dangerous if they're not used expertly.
And even somebody who, in my own experience, someone who's been doing this for a very long time, who has exceptional reviews, let's say, for their plastic surgery work, and they're very reputable, etc. But if you go to them for fillers, that is not the same thing as going to them for maybe a cosmetic procedure that's under anesthesia. And there's no denying the fact that there is an artistic aesthetic that not everyone has. Like, anyone can learn how to inject, anyone can become a doctor, but the art of understanding like every part of the anatomy and how to help somebody look the same or to modify the way that they look, it's so much an art form. It just cannot be understated.
It's true. And the consumer has a hard time untangling the facts because, like, you might think, okay, this person's a doctor, I can trust them. But I had a patient who's my long-term patient, went to see her OB-GYN, male doctor, who she's known him for 20 years, a great doctor, has delivered so many babies. But when she came in with lip filler, I was like, it was botched, it had lumps, it had irregularities. And I was like, what are you doing? I don't know if I trust that man to put my mascara on, let alone my lip filler. He's a great doctor, but there's so much skill involved and it's precision artistry. And you got to do a lot of volume of the same work over and over to get good results, not just sporadic.
Facts. This might not be very popular, and I don't want to get you in trouble in your industry, but I'll say it if you're not willing to. I just think a woman kind of understands a woman's aesthetic better than a man.
Oh my God. So true. So true. And I get in trouble all the time in my industry for saying what I think, but I don't mind because I really feel that there is a difference between a woman provider and a male provider. And it's just that concept of like, I wouldn't trust every man to put my mascara on, put my face together. Certain men, yes. Amazing. The best makeup artists sometimes.
Right.
Are, but 98% of them are not,
That all female are superior, but I'm just saying, like, you know, as a woman, you do understand a certain aesthetic that we might be trying to ask for, go for. And while we're on that subject, you're a minute over 40. Mm-hmm. I'm a minute over 40. And I think that has a lot to do with understanding what happens as we age and really relating to that woman who I'm not trying to deny the fact that I'm aging. I mean, I was doing this when I was in my late 20s. It's just something I've always done. Now it just takes a much more careful, discerning eye so that I want to look like I look.
Yes. You know? Maintaining your self-identity is so important because people can erase every line now with filler, but you can change and contort the way the face looks to the point that the person is not recognizable or they lost that cute factor of their face, and that self-identity needs to be preserved and you still should feel good about yourself. But that whole concept of men explaining beauty to women, like this is you beautiful in a man's eye. It's not a man's eye that counts to us. And I always find that so upsetting on Instagram when I see images of women's bodies sexualized and like with boob lifts and butt lifts and contouring, and they're putting these sexy bikinis up. And I'm like, I have droopy boobs from four kids, but I don't want to see that image to inspire me to get my boobs done.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I also think that when we, you know, you see these kinds of images, it's like you said, to imply as if we're doing this for men. And I don't know, maybe some women do, but I find that myself and my girlfriends, like when I'm picking out outfits, even, you know, let's not forget about injectables. When I'm picking out outfits, I'm like, oh, well, my girlfriends think this is cute. You know what I mean? Like, I think we dress for each other.
Yes.
So that's a whole nother topic. So many of my listeners want to start doing this. The first question is like, when should I start getting Botox or injections? Is that something that I am better off starting that younger so that I don't have to do as much later? Or will I look overdone by the time I'm in my 50s?
I'm a big fan of starting as soon as you start to see repetitive lines, lines that are present at rest, like static lines, that's when you should start. So 26, 27, 30, whenever your face is starting to show it. And whenever you look in the mirror and you see a certain area that keeps bothering you, that's the time.
So but don't do it just start, because everyone's doing it.
No, don't do it just because you're 22 and all your friends think baby Botox is cool. Wait till you see some functional issues like some static lines, or you know that it runs in your family and you're starting to see that groove. But when you start early, like I did my first Botox around 26, 27, and then you just really never get lines. And you at that age, you maybe you do it once a year, twice a year at the most. The maintenance is easy and it's just a really important process to start taking care of yourself young.
Are there any long-term negative effects of filler? We've heard lots of people and there's TikToks and YouTubes, et cetera, where you'll hear these stories about filler migration. Or, you know, filler that moves around, or these just, it looks worse after they've done filler. So what are some of the most common negative side effects when it comes to fillers?
Well, really, I think overfilling is the worst thing that can happen. And that is what people see on TV when they see the Academy Awards and people have big apple cheeks and it just doesn't look very Hollywood.
Yeah.
But that's the use of too much filler, too frequent, and just, you know, overutilization. Problem. And filler migration happens when also we put too much filler in a location, it starts to bleed outside the borders, the anatomic borders of that location. Like lip filler starts to look very ducky or looks almost like a filler mustache. Yeah. So those are some common problems: overfilling, migration of filler, lumps and nodules from incorrect injection technique. And virtually everything stems from incorrect injection technique.
When you say it has a lot to do with the injector, is that person who's overfilled, they're going back to their injector? I assume that you have conversations with your, and it's tricky if you're talking to a client who they have an aesthetic in mind and it's their opinion. It's what they find attractive. And if you feel like from your professional opinion, like this is going to look really like a puffy blowfish, how do you have that conversation with them and discourage them from doing more?
I mean, it's a real fine line, and I'm a person who's all about self-expression, and I want you to achieve that avatar in your head, that ideal impression of beauty that you have. So like, I would never tell Dolly Parton, don't get more boobs. Your boobs are too big for your little tiny frame, because that makes Dolly Dolly, right?
True.
So same thing with big lips. When I see lips that are like slightly too big and it doesn't match the person's vibe, like they come in like dressed like a normal girl, but they want huge lips, I'll just remind them that don't forget, if we do too much, when you walk in a room, people are going to look at your lips and not your eyes when you're talking to them.
That's
party. And number two, like, you don't want to give off porn star vibes. Or maybe you do. Maybe you are a porn star. Maybe that's your aesthetic.
But more alarm bells going off in the background. So perfect.
I have a doctor client, a gorgeous doctor, and she's like, I need fangirl lips. I need
fangirl.
I need only fans lips.
I was like,
oh my God, that's hysterical. But she's the most conservative, but she wants only fans lips.
Wow. Well, you know, Sierra and I came up to see you before the wedding, right, for just a little touch up, and you added a little bit of lip filler to one side of my lip to really kind of balance it out and just, you know, not to look done or different. And Sierra wanted a little bit of lip filler. And you said to her, we just want to do a touch. A touch, because it's your wedding day and you don't want anyone to notice anything different about you. It needs to be very, very subtle. And I thought that was great advice, great motherly advice.
Yeah, sometimes you have to bring in the reins because people have been scrolling obsessively and screenshotting every influencer who has now 3 syringes. Every normal influencer right now who has natural lips has 2 to 3 syringes.
Really?
Yes, our psyches have just changed so that so much visual blasting of large lips has made us feel that normal is 2 to 3 syringes right
now. So let's talk about pricing. What does a syringe of lip filler typically run?
Yeah, in LA, like around probably $750 to $1,000 for a syringe is reasonable in LA. And it can be, you can find it much cheaper. Of course, you'll find $400 lip filler in LA. And then you can find it even higher, like on Rodeo Drive, it's going to be $2,500 for lip filler. So, but a normal place that's doing good work should be roughly $800 to $1,000 for a really nice lip result. Someone who spent time training, has the facilities that are clean and sterilized, and buys American-made FDA-approved product.
We're going to do a whole deep dive into lip fillers because I think it's one of those things that can really change your look. There's so many nuances and questions and, you know, about migration and dissolving it and placement and just all the things. So we're going to do a deep dive.
Crazy. And so it's one of our most popular treatments. Results are 98% effective. Patients rarely will get a side effect like a drooping eyelid, and that's almost always from incorrect injection technique or anatomy challenges. And so it's super safe. There's no long-term neurologic problems. Sometimes people can get resistance to Botox if you've been doing it for ages and ages and you always use the same brand. There are little proteins in the bottle that your body can get sensitized to. It's almost like a vaccination of every time you get your Botox, you're vaccinated with that protein. So we might push to a brand that's more ultra purified, that has different complexing proteins in it. And there are in the United States 4 different FDA approved brands right now.
What are the top 3 in your mind?
Brand name Botox, Xeomin, which is the ultra purified one, Dysport, which is also, they've all 3 been around for almost 20 years. And then Juvo, which is the newest one.
Is there big differences between them, or are they just brand names?
Just brand name differences. These are technically the exact same molecule, folded in slightly different manner with slightly different proteins in each bottle. So for me, I like the one that's ultra purified. I don't need any extra junk in the bottle. But they all work the same. They're Pepsi and Coke. Your body will tell you which one does best for you, and you'll choose your favorite. I recommend people, when you're young, probably start with the most purified version and maybe periodically switching. I've done that in my life, is trying one for a few months or a year and then switching to another and then back and forth, just so that you don't develop any kind of resistance to it or get used to it. Because there can be a little dose creep where sometimes you start at a certain dose and then each year you kind of need a little more, a little more, a little more.
That happens. That makes sense. For someone who's just getting started with injectables, do you think it's always like the first place to start is with Botox, or might it be with filler?
You know what? These days, lip filler is the thing that brings people into the office because it's so popular on social media. So I would say all the 20 to 30s are coming in for lip filler. And maybe the 35 to 55 are coming in for first time for Botox. But it's either lip filler or Botox that's the most common thing right now.
For a woman over 40, what is your personal recommendation? Or do you find, like, most women over 40, if I do a little bit of injecting here, they're going to get a more youthful appearance?
100%. I think 70 to 80% of the beauty comes from the mid-face and the cheeks.
So if I was face and cheeks, okay.
Almost without fail, everyone in their 30s to 40s loses volume in the apple of the cheeks. The apple starts to fall, pull down. You feel a little droopy, jowly. You might even feel your eye getting weighted. So putting the cheek back where it belongs gives so much beauty back to the face. So that's my number one. Maybe my number one, if you're chicken and you're scared of filler, I would start a little dose of Botox, a little baby Botox around the forehead and crow's feet, because you automatically feel refreshed.
So true.
And awake and pretty. And then some cheek filler. Those would be my two favorite recommendations for starters.
Now, what about at the temples?
That's an amazing place. And temple filler, temples are really where the cheeks begin, up high, and they lift the entire face. You get an open, wide, pretty eye, kind of like a Bella Hadid look. It's such a great place to put volume, but it's hidden behind the hair, and the amount of cleaning you have to do to explain to a new person who's not into fillers, it's like they don't quite get it. So I think starting with cheeks is important. And when I say cheeks, also everybody freaks out because they think of big, huge filler cheeks, like the puffy cheeks that they see in nightclubs and things. And that's not what I mean. I mean lateral cheekbone contour, which pulls weight back. And that actually almost lifts the nasolabial fold, like, and that'll improve that shadowing of the nasal fold too.
At what stage would you say, okay, we're doing filler every couple of years, we're looking at the cost, we're looking at, you know, the potential for migration, you might want to consider doing some type of a small implant or even a facelift?
I think when your neck starts to be a problem and the jowls feel heavy around the lower face, very difficult problem to solve with filler. Because
when you're deleting every single photo taken of you from a profile.
Exactly. When you start to see excess folds of skin in the lower face, and no matter what you do.
Yeah. Yes.
Then you need to consider a facelift. If you can pinch a centimeter of excess skin, then imagine that's way too much volume to have to put fillers into to tighten.
Yeah.
You really need to trim and sew it up with a mini lift or a full facelift, neck lift. So I really think look at your neck and look at your jowls. And if your neck really bothers you and your jowling is excessive, you should just go forward with the surgical idea, because this is how we end up with filler face, where there's too much doughy, puffy overuse of filler, is people think that filler can substitute for facelift, and it can't.
And what a precarious position for you to be in when there's somebody sitting in your chair, they've asked you for filler, and you're thinking to yourself, they could really use a facelift. I mean, it might be a better idea for them. How do you navigate the, you know, very personal experience that somebody has when another person is telling them you need to have surgery? Like, because I've heard people make these TikToks and they're like, I went to see this plastic surgeon for lip filler and she told me I needed this, and this. I'm like, what a tough place to be, because you would want someone who's going to be honest with you. Do you ask them for permission, or do you wait for them to ask questions?
I always ask for permission, because I've done that in the past as a younger doctor, when I would come in and say, you need this, and then people feel like insulted, like you've attacked and taken down their face. So I'll always ask, would you like me to give you a beauty plan? Because we can look at your upper, mid, and lower face and talk about things we can do. And then I'll also ask, would you consider surgery, or are we thinking of something with no downtime, non-surgical? And then we'll also kind of ask, like, budget-wise, are you in a position where you want to spend several $2,000, or are we thinking more like $20,000 to $30,000, and you have time for recovery? Because if you have no downtime, it's fillers, and if you have time for 2 weeks off, then you're thinking surgical.
Let's talk about pricing for the lower facelift, which seems like everyone's doing now. I assume that there's a couple of different types, if I'm not mistaken. Price range for the lower facelift?
Definitely. So for a mini lift, which is a weird terminology because sometimes people use it incorrectly, but I consider a mini lift to be opening just in the lower face, and we're not involving the neck at all. And that's something you might do if you're in the 45 to 55 year old range and you don't have neck laxity, but you feel slightly jowly. So that kind of thing can range anywhere from, like, a, you know, conservatively in LA, it's higher, but maybe $12,000 to $20,000. And then if you're doing a facelift with a neck lift, this is where we run into a lot longer OR time. And often people are adding their eyelids and other things at the same time. So that might be 6 to 8 hours of surgery.
Are they moving muscles around and things?
Yeah, we're doing a deep plane lift where we're pulling up the muscles, repositioning fat, doing fat transfer, and then skin tightening as well. And so something like that definitely takes more time and can range anywhere from, you know, $25,000 to $55,000 to $80,000.
Wow. So
quite extensive. And then it just depends on where you go and what part of town, who's the surgeon.
And there are ways to finance all those things.
There are, but I would say reasonable person can expect for a mini lift around $15,000 to $20,000. And then for a major facelift, we're talking more like $20,000 to $30,000.
Okay. And yeah. When you say a neck lift, where do they tuck the skin in? Like in the back of your hairline or?
Yeah. And when we're adding neck lift, the incision curves around the front of the ear up into the back of the hairline and it's hidden. And then facelift plus neck lift, definitely we're looking more like the 40 to 60,000 range, because that is a lot of work. And typically I would include the temporal region as well. So it's the full face up high in the temples, even the forehead or brow, and mid-face, lower face, and even including eyelids sometimes.
That sounds like a lot. It just does. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, gosh, I would really wake up and look totally different. You know what I mean? Like, but let me ask this. Is it easier to make a very subtle change by thinking about these things earlier, as opposed to like our moms who are like, well, when I'm 65, I'll have a facelift? Or you see these older actresses that like suddenly they reappear and they look 25 years younger versus, we won't name names, or maybe we will, but certain celebrities now who are, you're like, they just haven't aged. And I have to wonder, are they just doing like little minor procedures?
I think the celebrities are routinely doing Botox and fillers all through their 40s. I think very often they'll start doing threads, which gives a little minor degree of lifting, especially in the brow and the lower face. And they start that around 40, 45. And then mini lift, just with facial tightening only, is very common, like 45 to 50, like the J-Lo's of the world, repeat. I'll say allegedly, the J-Lo's mini lifts and things like that. And then, yeah, when you get to be 55, 60, you do need to address jowling. And unless you're someone who's been doing collagen stimulation, fillers, peels, and lasers, and regular routine maintenance, you are going to need a facelift at some point if you don't want to have jowling. And you don't need to have a facelift. You can age naturally and just be gorgeous, you know. But if the jowls bother you, that 55 range is about the right time, between 55 to 65, to think of having your first procedure. And I always tell patients, like, you're going to get two chances for facelift in your life. You can only have two good facelifts. Anyone who does a third ends up looking a little freaky. No matter how good your surgeon, there's only so much face repositioning that can happen before you look a little different. So I think you have two good options. One is right in that 55 to 65 range. And then the next time around, hopefully that'll last you a good 20 years. And then you can do another if you need to, around 75. And then after that, your health issues take over and you want to be conservative, right?
Yeah. Going back to the neck, I see you on your page. And by the way, we'll link to Dr. K, Beauty by Dr. K, the Instagram, her website, etc., as well as some of the products I use, like, I don't even know if we'll have time to get into that, but like my skincare routine is all your stuff and it's amazing. But let's talk about the neck for a second, because I saw on your Instagram a lot of people coming in to do those creases that they get in your neck. And I think they call that tech neck, you know, because our heads are in this downward position looking at our phones. And when you get these deep creases through your neck, and I see you're treating those on your Instagram feed. Tell us, how are you treating those?
Tech necks. Yes, it's happening at such a young age. I'm treating like 25, 35 year olds with that, because we are always on our laptops and phones. And I use a filler. So if you're looking at the horizontal kind of rings, usually people have two, maybe three neck rings, that'll be a filler, like a temporary gel filler that lasts up to a year. And it immediately rehydrates that line. When you leave here, you shouldn't be bending and looking down at your phone for the first 1 week while the gel kind of solidifies.
That'd be key.
And then there was one other treatment for necks, if you have creping and textural change. And I kind of mentioned, like, when you have a neck that starts to look like grandma's skin right there.
Yeah.
That's called a collagen stimulation treatment. We inject with diluted calcium hydroxyapatite or Sculptra. And that builds new collagen so that the tissue's not so crepey and wrinkly. So those are both really nice neck treatments that are non-surgical.
What is that procedure called? Or is that just...
I call it a neck wash. My terminology for it is a neck wash. It treats 100 square centimeters of skin. do that twice, so like over 6 weeks apart.
And who's a good candidate for Kybella? How does Kybella work?
Kybella is fun. That's our fat melting shot. It's permanent fat destruction, and it's for people who don't want to have lipo. And it's typically recommended for that little pinch under the double chin area. It takes about 3 vials. So if you can pinch 1 inch, 3 vials, 2 inches, 6 vials, 3 inches, like on the sides, then about 9 to 12 vials. Okay. And it does swell a ton. So that's probably the biggest disadvantage is you feel a little bullfroggy for the first week to 10 days. And I've done it and I've loved it. I did it over Christmas 1 year and I went to all the parties, but I just didn't want to be in any pictures. So it's doable.
Okay.
And it just tightens up that one spot where you just can't lose the little chub.
Okay. Now, for those people who are, you know, dealing with their jowls and they're not yet ready, or maybe they can't afford to do a facelift yet, is there any type of injection procedure that pulls the face back there?
Yes. Okay, great question, because I sometimes put Kybella right in the jowl fat pad too.
Oh.
That can might melt this fat pad, because I'll recommend lifting your cheek to pull things up. We'll recommend jawline tightening to pull things back, but some people still have that little wedge of fullness that needs to melt the jowl fat. And that's the Kybella 2 sessions. It kills the fat permanently. It's quite effective.
And how bad is the bruising?
That's not too bad. I mean, anytime you do any kind of injectable with me, you'd be prepared to have a bruise that could last 7 to 10 days and have to wake up. So, yeah.
Well, listen, I don't want to give people unrealistic expectations, but you're the only injector I've ever gone to where I'll have a tiny little bruise that I can cover up with concealer. Whereas in the past when I'd done injections, I was like, I have to have a full week off from being on camera, not like off from work, but like from going on camera or like going out to dinner, because I would just be like so bruised. Why is it some injectors end up with very bruised patients and some don't? Is it your technique? Is it the needle?
I think it's a combination of just knowing anatomy, because you want to avoid veins and arteries. And if you are away from those entry points, you won't hit them ideally. And I also think it's the light touch. Like, you have to have a delicate light touch. And you can just tell that sometimes when people massage you or do a facial on you. Like, some people have good hands and some people are a little like pinchy.
Yes. Yes. And there's nothing worse than going to get a pedicure and the person's just like barely touching your legs. I'm like, oh, yes, please, I need deeper.
Yes.
Whatever it costs. Let's talk about spider veins and varicose veins. You know, as we age, the legs, especially for white women, your skin just tends to look more translucent. Even if you don't have varicose veins, it just feels like your legs become more spidery. Mm-hmm. What is your recommendation for that?
Well, number one is to wear those horrible stockings, which I have on right now.
Really?
Yes.
They do
all
help.
Day long. Oh my God, you need them. If you're on your feet all day, those are like compression hose that have 20 to 30 millimeters of mercury of pressure that keeps the veins compressed and flat. Because otherwise the veins will pool and dilate. So that really helps. And I used to have real achy legs at the end of every day, but this has been a game changer. And you can just Amazon those there.
Okay.
Easy. And that's prevention too. But once you already have the varicose veins, we'll do sclerotherapy. So injections of an agent that scleroses or closes off the vein. And then that usually blocks those veins. They kind of just close down, clot off, and metabolize away.
Wait, how does the body know what to do when a road's closed? You know what I mean?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, how does that work?
The downside of closing off one tributary of a river is another branch can open. So immediately after we inject your leg veins, we're going to want you to put these compression hose on for a couple weeks to generate flow to the major veins. We don't mind if the veins open up the highways, but we don't want the side streets.
Okay, that makes sense. And is that painful? And let's talk cost.
No, that's not painful. That's pretty reasonable. It's like around, maybe it takes about 30-minute treatment. It costs about $300. You can use a laser. We can also use an injection therapy. It can bruise. You can get sometimes some pigmentation in the area of bruising. But overall, it's a great treatment, and I would recommend doing it early. Like, don't wait till you have a whole spider web of veins. The first few branches is a great time to start on that.
Is that something you have to maintain? And if you stop, do the veins all come back?
Once they're gone, then they're closed off, then they're done. But if they start to come back, you'll attack them again. And then if you're genetically prone to that, You know, you may be doing this throughout your life, just like a maintenance thing, but it's pretty effective. And you treat one area and you can move on to another area and you can kind of get through both legs that way.
Are there any treatments for sagging skin around the inner thighs and knee areas?
Well, we do definitely some radio frequency with microneedling, which can shrink and tighten the skin everywhere, but it does take 4 to 6 sessions. That is really good. And also the use of collagen stimulators. Those are products that when you inject them, like Sculptra or diluted Radius, those are injected. They grow brand new collagen, which just gives the strength and backing to the skin. Kind of like when you put backing on a dress, it hangs better, right? So it gives that underground skeletal framework back to the skin. So it's not like just crepey and, you know. So I love that idea of rebuilding skin foundation. Those are the main things we can do. But, you know, if there's too much laxity, again, it's trim and tighten with surgical.
Yeah, that's a lot. What about, or why would we use our own fat as a fat transfer for filler versus one of the other commonly used products? Which is better?
That's a great question. I get that all the time because people are like, well, filler only lasts a year. Why don't I put my fat there and it'll last forever? So you can do fat transfer if, number one, you have enough fat. So some of our Southern California models don't have any body fat. It becomes difficult.
Are you serious?
But, yes.
Do we even have to like them?
No, those
days. Can I donate to these bitches?
We can donate, yes. The second thing is you have to be willing to undergo lipo to harvest the fat and transfer it. Thirdly, we want the fat to take up roots. We can take the fat, pulverize it into a fine paste, and inject it wherever we'd like it to grow, but we're basically seeding the garden and we don't know which seeds will take root. And so fat can be very precarious because if depending on how you harvest it, if you're delicate and atraumatic, and depending on the patient's blood supply, if it's going to provide nutrition and food and flow, then that all determines if the fat grows. And if it grows, one problem can be the fat may not grow uniformly. So you can have patchy growth, like you seeded the lawn and some of the seeds took and you got grass in some areas and no grass in other areas. That can be a problem in the face because there's not a lot of room for contour irregularities. So fat can take several sessions to get the contouring just right. And that's the difference with filler. Filler is consistent, reliable. What you see is what you get. I know when I place it, it's staying, and it's going to stay exactly how I curve it and place it. And there's a little difference. Eat too much, your fat gets fatter. You get too skinny, your fat can either resolve a little, or you can be skinny and your fat can stay bulgy in a weird
way. I also hear a lot about fat necrosis. And is it more likely to see necrosis from a fat transfer versus using a filler?
That happens mainly from when we use filler because the blood flow can be, if it's injected incorrectly, you can lose blood supply to an area and you can get fat or skin necrosis. Yeah. And with fat itself, once it takes, if it dies, then it dies and just gets reabsorbed. But if it takes root, then it's good.
You said you have to do lipo in order to get the fat out, to put the fat someplace else. But if we're talking about just like a microscopic amount that you're putting under your eye, is that like a major liposuction procedure or can they like take it out microscopically? Like I'm picturing.
It's kind of just small. It will be like a micro cannula or even looks like a needle and syringe and it can be right in your abdomen through a tiny incision, but we still call it lipo.
Okay. And so what about the, you know, people who are getting fillers or fat transfers under their eyes? And I've seen people who, when they do this, like the skin there is so thin.
Yeah,
but it feels like you can almost like see like a, you know, how some people who like in their 80s, they get that like big bag right there, that big bulge. So why are some people looking worse when they do that procedure? Were they the wrong candidate for it?
So with filler, it's often incorrect placement of the filler. We want that filler to be layered under the orbital musculature. And that way it stays like it hydrates and it makes things look smooth, but it's placed under a plane where it's not going to bulge out weirdly. So sometimes inexperienced injectors will inject just under the skin. They won't even be under the muscle. And then you can right away see the bulges and the problems. We have to dissolve it. It looks like a blue hue.
Yeah.
So if you're someone who's had under eye filler and it's blue and bulgy, you're going to come see me so I can dissolve it and do it right for you.
Do you do a lot of dissolving?
Oh my gosh. Every day we are seeing one or two patients from outside the office that come in that need help. And it's because Right now, this is so popular to get filler and stuff done, but people don't always have the credentials.
So here's a really good question. And like I said, we're going to talk in more in depth about lips, but this one almost feels like it's more about the lower part of the face. For those people who maybe they're not a smoker, but they have all the smoker's wrinkles around their lips and their lower jaw, mm-hmm. is what can be done for that? Because it feels like that's like not just the lips, it's like everything around it.
It's like little kitty whiskers everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a difficult problem. It's sun damage that causes that, and then just loss of elasticity of the skin. It's like when you leave a newspaper in the driveway, it gets aged and cracked and yellow. So the skin actually goes through that process. I like to use the collagen stimulators, which would be like Sculptra and products that grow new collagen to build that foundation back in the skin. And skin smoothening products like the hyperdiluted Radies is great. And so those are things that you can inject. And then superficially, we do microneedling. We want to change the texture and the surface of the skin. So microneedle and laser and chemical peels are the way to change the surface of that irregularity.
What about surgery?
Surgery there can tighten if you have a lot of laxity. You can pull up the loose skin and tighten. It may not take away all of the whiskering or all of the kind of indented lines, the etched lines. And sometimes filler is better for that, or laser actually is the best for that.
Combination in some cases, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. That's a difficult problem. And when we get aged around the mouth, it just genuinely looks like it's elderly. So we want to treat that early, at the earliest signs of it.
What about this trend that, you know, a lot of, again, 20, 30 something influencers seem to be jumping on board with, changing the shape of their eyes? Like, I keep hearing like, oh, now it's the almond eye. No, now it's the fox eye.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? And are they literally, these young girls, doing surgeries to change the shape of their eye?
You're literally crazy. Literally. You just have to understand that your face is not a trend and you have to maintain classic beauty. And this is me inflicting my opinion, but that's my opinion, is you need to stay classically beautiful. And I don't mind if we do a little bit of a cat eye or a little bit of a foxy eye. When I'm doing a blepharoplasty or upper eyelid surgery, I can tilt the incision just slightly upwards and outwards. But I am not a person who's going to put in threads or drastically york up the sides of your eyebrows and make it look aggressively different, because it's not my view. That's not beauty. And I can accentuate your beauty with a little of a cat eye feature, a little bit of this or that. But I want you to look good, not just today, but 20 years from now, to not regret this decision. Because I've seen the other end of that, which people come in 20, 30 years later, and even if it's just a bad body tattoo, they're just so regretful. But imagine someone who got a butt implant or boob implants that were way too much for them, and now they're 65, 70, and it's just not, anatomically, it doesn't look right. It's an embarrassment for them. It becomes a self-confidence problem in the opposite way.
It's crazy how these things really can become trends, right? Like, I think about how I'm happy to see that it feels like, anyways, girls in their 20s don't care about breast size. Like, they're not doing implants, and they're very, you know, it seems like they're more okay with having their natural breasts. And, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, like, I remember when I moved to Southern California and I auditioned to teach at a fitness club, right? And all the fitness instructors, I looked around and I asked a girl next to me, I go, do you have to get breast implants? Like, is it a requirement? Because, like, every girl had breast implants.
Yes.
And I just felt like I look so, these are natural. Will I be able to teach here? Like,
is this, oh my God. Yeah.
Literally.
That's literally what our girls are going through right now when they go to nightclubs and they're out at parties and things. If they don't have the super huge lips and the contoured features, and like, it's just a lot of work. I mean, God bless those girls that do all that. But I just think it's a lot for younger girls to have to think their faces need to look that way to be socially beautiful.
What about threads? You mentioned them a moment ago, and I haven't heard great things about threads, but here's your opinion.
I do threads, and threads have been around for 20 years, more than 20 years, probably 50 years. And as a surgeon, I do threads that are placed surgically with a knot anchoring them someplace so they don't budge, like a permanent suture. A thread is basically a suture. So if you lay a suture down with no anchor points, how much sense does that make? A little.
Is that what's happening? We're seeing poor results?
Yes, these sutures have little tiny etchings in them. They're laser cut so that they do have little spikes along the edges. that anchor and pull it back on the skin.
Kind of like little hooks along the thread?
Little hooks along the thread. Okay. So that's how they're anchoring them. But you can imagine the force that you use when you sleep on your face. Like I wake up in the morning and my cheek is flat. Right? It's like the head, head is as heavy as a bowling ball. So if you're going to put all that force on these little teeny tiny microscopic hooks on a piece of fishing wire, how long is that going to last? Mm. So logically speaking, like, yeah, they give you some nice traction. They'll pull back 2-3 millimeters at the most. They do look good. Like when you're at the point where you have good volume with filler and you've done appropriate facial volumization and you want a little more traction back on things, it's like a little bit of Velcro to pull things back. So I like them, but I don't advertise it because it's a recipe for dissatisfaction.
Oh,
you're going to spend like $2,000, $3,000 for an 8-month result. It's not bad. Some people want that 8 months of looking hot and good. And and then the one nice thing is they do stimulate collagen production everywhere you put them. But for me, I think I'm a surgeon. I'd rather do surgery if you have laxity.
For sure. Let's get it over with. Okay. Nose jobs. Your techniques are like, if you guys have not seen them, it's insane. So you do, and I'm not sure what it's called.
The Tinkerbell tip lift is called the Tinkerbell tip lift.
But I'm talking about when women come to you and men who have this like really deep indentation between their eyes and then the nose kind of bumps out.
Yes, a big hump.
Yeah, the big hump. And then they come to you and you give them like a liquid nose job. Explain what's going on there.
That is so much fun. And it's one of my most popular procedures. That's the use of filler, the hyaluronic gel fillers, to give you an instant rhinoplasty. It takes about, you know, an hour in total. We numb you for 30 minutes and then the procedure itself is 15 minutes, no downtime. And I can reshape the nose. So a hump that you've always hated, a crooked area, if you've had a drooping tip. And I call it the Tinkerbell tip lift because I'm able to create a very sharp upturn, very elegant and cute tip to the nose. So it makes the nose more aquiline and streamlined, and people just like tear up and are so joyful. It's just a fun procedure to do. It's one of my favorites, but you have to see a very good practitioner because it also can, there are rare risks, like rare risk of blindness or stroke or loss of vision with any of these injections, but particularly the nose is an area where so many important blood vessels come together. We have to be so
I mean, if you're considering the expense, the downtime, and the pain of going to get a nose job, please consider doing your research and thinking about finding the best practitioner to do this, because I too have heard just nightmare stories about complications, but your before and afters are like, I'm like, oh my God. So some of these people, I think they must say to themselves, like, why didn't I do this 10 years ago?
Exactly. And it's fun. The nice thing is like, you can see the difference immediately.
Immediate.
You go home with a new nose. And it's a great way to just dip your foot in the water if you want to try what a rhinoplasty would look like on you. This one's going to last about 12 to 18 months, and cost-wise was around $2,500 or so. And it's just a real crowd pleaser. Everybody loves good with a very profile. You know, their profile looks amazing. Just
is it possible to sculpt the nose to make it like if your nose was just a little bit broader from the front?
Yeah.
Are you able to add filler to make the nose look more narrow?
Yes, and this happens to us as women when we age. We get broader, flatter, and drooping of the tip happens just from the cartilage grows and starts to droop like every crazy thing. So I can make the nose look slimmer and more streamlined and thinner and less bulbous. Sometimes people have a wider bulbous tip. We can bring the tip sharper and looks really nice.
So with the lip, you've got like an area and borders where you're filling. And because you're so good at this, you've done so many years and years and years. I mean, you are the expert that other people come to learn proper technique when it comes to injections. I mean, nobody's better at lips than you. Nobody, period, end of subject.
Thank you. You're so sweet.
No, that's true. That is true. But so I understand like why it's probably less likely to see migration in the lips because there's an area that you're filling. But like when you're putting in an area, like let's say on the top of your nose, what's that called?
The dorsum, the bridge on the bridge.
Yeah, the bridge of your nose. There's like nothing to hold it in. So how does that filler node just stay like right there?
So that's all about the depth and plane of the injection. And when I'm injecting deep on the periosteum, which is the bony cover. There's like a thin membrane where the filler needs to be placed. So it's really super precise process. It looks so easy on an Instagram video. That's what scares me, is that people that are injectors are like, oh, I'm going to just try that. I watched that video. It's just, I'll watch YouTube and I'll go do it. But you can get fuller migration in your nose, and I've seen it. I've had to treat it where people come in and they have a weird, broad, like kind of Cro-Magnon look right there, where they've had like way too much in their tip and it made a small nose look fatter. Because, you know, we're adding gel.
Yeah. So
you think it would get bigger, but it's a visual illusion to make it look skinnier and better.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the upside. I think the upside of injections, like people fear like, oh no, what if it looks horrible? But there's so many ways that these things can be dissolved.
Yeah, that's right. These fillers can be dissolved. And if you were to say, well, I loved my liquid rhino and now I want to get a regular surgical rhino, we dissolve the gel and then you have surgery the very next week.
Well, the last thing I want to ask you before I let you go is for the gals who are listening who are just not great about their skincare routine. They don't want to do 8 steps or 5 steps or however many steps. If you had to pick just one product for a woman, let's say, who's over 40, she's going, like the next 5 years is the only thing that she could use from your line of products. What would it be?
Wow, that's a great question. Okay, well, it's going to have to be my Transform Stem Cell Growth Factor. Because that is chock full of ingredients, got 105 human-derived peptides and growth factors that just make your skin behave so youthfully. And it lightens and brightens. It's great for pore size. It grows collagen. And it's kind of just a great moisturizer, too. So
how does that help pore size?
Because it...
The collagen?
More collagen production, so it tightens around the pores better. And it just kind of smoothens the quality of the skin. You'll see even small scars fill in a little bit. It's a great product. I love that. And if I had to pick a number two, it would be my Diamond Line Refine, which is a retinol product. It's Retin A. Retin A is a vitamin A cream. It's so important for collagen production.
Does that also lighten the skin?
It can spots? Because it exfoliates. It makes skin turn over fast. So browner, deader looking skin comes up and gets off of you.
When we have serums and lotions and, you know, retinols and vitamin C's and what order should we be putting those things in? At a certain point, is it just like so much on my face? Like, should I be pausing in between? And do you have an order that you recommend people put products on their face?
It's always going to be the thinnest and lightest first. And the
that's easy to remember.
Yeah, like the serums are thin and light. They absorb quickly. And then I'll put those on first. And your most active products also should go on first. So
what would that be?
So like if I'm using a bleaching pad, I'll wipe that on all over. Once it soaks in, then maybe I'll add my serums, the vitamin C and hyaluronic serum. And then I'll finish off with moisturizer and thicker kind of lipid or oil-based type of creams to seal things in. And lastly would be sunscreen.
Okay.
On top of that, makeup.
I know that your eye gel is amazing too. Holy cow. What's in that?
That's the Illuminize Eye Gel. It's really good. That also actually is one of the only eye creams to have Retin A and retinol in it. And it has a ton of green tea. I'm very into green tea polyphenols. Green tea is one of the most potent antioxidants out there. And that can help reverse sun damage and also help as a growth factor for new skin to grow and stay renewed. You know,
if you're, I'll put a link to everything in our show notes too. And I know I said that was our last question, but is it okay if I lied?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because so many women struggle with hair loss and thinning hair as we age, especially. I know you have a serum that you recommend. Is there any kind of a treatment for that person who's like, I want something faster. Like, this is killing me. You know, I think hair is such a part of our femininity and it can really feel like a loss of identity when we lose our hair. Mm-hmm. Are there any treatments that you recommend?
Definitely. And if you're starting to see hair thinning and hair fall, you have to do something right away. You got to put a towel on the floor, brush your hair and count how many hairs fall. Look at if there are follicles on the end. More than 100 hairs per day.
You said look for what? What are we looking for?
A little white bulb at the end of the hairs, because that means the shaft and the root are all falling out as one piece.
So versus breakage from over blonding your hair. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So kind of do that hair count. More than 100 hairs is where we start to worry that like, okay, there's a real problem. And then secondly, get blood work done with your doctor, because often it can be anemia, low thyroid, or need for vitamin replacements. And that's important to treat your health. Make sure you don't have an autoimmune issue. And then thirdly, we do start on a treatment right away. If you can't come in to see me, get some over-the-counter Rogaine or minoxidil for women, and start using once a week a dandruff shampoo like a Salsom Blue or Head and Shoulders. Did you know that fungus on the scalp is one of the reasons that hair can start thinning too? And that normally does live on the scalp surface. So even if you don't have dandruff, it's part of sort of the flora of the scalp. But a few studies have shown that at least once a week use of anti-dandruff shampoos can help. Number four would be like start on a boosting product that will grow more hair follicles back. It's difficult to do, but some products like my serum has growth factors that improve hair production. And really important is getting rid of testosterone that binds on the surface of the scalp. So testosterone turns into DHT. That's a product that binds to the oils in the hair and causes miniaturization and thinning of the follicles. So you start to see more scalp because your hairs are thinner, and then it causes that frontal baldness or thinning right here, androgenic alopecia. Too much androgens or the male testosterones are on the women's scalp.
For those of you who are listening, she's pointing right now to like the middle, like where your middle part would be in the middle of your forehead.
Yeah, when you're starting to see scalp in the middle there, so you want to
But you said you want to get rid of testosterone there. What does that mean?
Well, your body's naturally making that testosterone, and so we're going to use shampoos that wash that away from the roots, and there are many herbal components to that.
I have no idea this is even a thing.
Yeah, and that's part of my hair loss kit. So there's shampoo, conditioner, and serum, and we often use herbal remedies too, and that's part of my product, like rosemary and certain herbs and things that are known throughout the ages to help get rid of DHT on the scalp. So it's not just like cosmeceuticals. There's also like herbal benefits, herbal things that can help grow hair stronger.
And what about injections into the hairline?
So that'll be the next step. So these things we talked about, you do at home. Then you come to see me and we can do platelet-rich plasma injections. We draw your blood, we spin it down, we harvest your platelet-derived stem cell growth factors, and that is injected into the scalp. And we also do red light therapy. If you've heard it, there are red light foams, red light caps. I've seen one even at Costco. There's a great one called Revion. There's one called BioLight. These products stimulate the infrared light therapy, makes more hair grow, more circulation, just better for you. So easy to use too. You just throw it on while you're doing your emails.
What does that type of procedure cost with the injections?
Injections. The injections are usually about $750 per session. We do three for $1,500. I'm not about getting money out of people. I want people to come in and be like part of our tribe, you know,
sure.
life. Yeah. Come in and take care of yourself. Spend time with me. So one session every 6 weeks.
Okay.
Numb your scalp. We draw your blood. We do the injections. Often people do the same treatment for their face. So they'll microneedle their face and we'll tattoo in the stem cell growth factor. It's so good for skin. We'll microneedle the hair roots and follicles and then actually put deeper injections. So by the time you leave, you feel a little bit like a pincushion, but boy, is it good for you.
Phew.
And get 20 to 30% more hair growth unless immediately the hair fall stops, but the hair regrowth can take, you know, 4 to 6 sessions. So you have to be patient. You're fertilizing a garden, waiting for it to grow. The hair growth cycle takes 4 months.
So good. You know, all of this it's exciting. You can get caught up in wanting to do all of the things. I think it's important for everybody to recognize, like, you know, you don't have to do any of these things. Is it bothering you? Are you thinking about it constantly? Every time you look in the mirror, whatever that is, then you shouldn't have any guilt or shame in the fact that you want to do this. But you also don't have to feel like you need to do it. So it's to each their own. We just wanted to make this an opportunity for people to understand and to remove some fear and to think about what different options were available. And I also think in removing the fear, it's very helpful to see what these things, what these procedures look like. And sometimes the before and afters and Beauty by Dr. K, her Instagram, you're going to see. I love that you show all of the things that you do. Because I think some plastic surgeons, they just show like the before and after, and you just don't know if it's been photoshopped or if it's even their work. You do such a great job of explaining what you're doing and why and where. And so that's another great place if you're kind of freaked out about this stuff, but also very intrigued. Go spend some time scrolling through her Instagram account.
Do a deep dive. You're deep so dive. Kind to refer people to me. I appreciate it so much. Everyone do your homework and ask your friends also. And like, it's really important to take care of yourselves. Women have a lot thrown at them. And on the one hand, you get criticized if you don't take care of yourself. On the other hand, you get criticized if you do take care of yourself. And so, but I teach my daughters, you have to maintain your self-identity and self-confidence. And self-esteem It does not need to come from being pretty. It's pretty changes. You're not going to stay youthful. You got to have self-esteem from self-worth of education and who you are and how you treat people.
Amen.
And your character. But you also need to take care of yourself because it brings you some form of humans or, you know, you have a good hair day. You feel good about yourself. You need
Facts.
To show the best version of yourself every day.
Yes, I love it. Well, thank you so much for being a regular on the show. We really appreciate you.
Well, there you have it, guys. That was such a great podcast with Shalene Johnson, one of my favorite inspirational people on the gram. If you have not already checked her out, check out Shalene Johnson. She's an entrepreneur, boss babe. She started Beachbody Fitness. She is all about motivation, nutrition hacks, lifestyle hacks, living your best life. And she is one of the people that inspires me most on the gram. I need you guys to go check her out, The Shalene Johnson Show on her podcast, and Shalene Johnson on Instagram. And you can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find the amazing skincare that I recommend, my Desert Island products, my Stem Cell Growth Factor, my Diamond Line Refine. These things, you got to check them out. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.